a missionary field. Copenhagen seems like Athens in Paul's day. The pursuit of wealth and pleasure engrosses the attention of the people. Atheism is popular. Eating and drinking, dancing and merrymaking are the subjects of thought and conversation. There are many large and beautiful churches, but the people, like some of the Athenians, are worshiping an unknown God. There is no lack of doctors of divinity, of learned preachers, but they are ignorant of Bible religion. The teachers in the state church are looked up to by the people as unquestionable authority in matters of religion. They appear upon the street in a long clerical robe reaching to their feet, with a stiff, quilled ruffle of white linen, nearly a quarter of a yard in width about the neck. As they pass, men take off their hats and make a low obeisance, and women curtsy, with an air of the greatest reverence. As I saw them, I could not but think of the words of Christ, and the words apply to these priests as truly as to the ancient rabbis. All their works they do for to be seen of men. They make broad their phylacteries and enlarge the borders of their garments and love the uppermost rooms at feasts and the chief seats in the synagogues and greetings in the markets. And to be called of men rabbi, rabbi. It seems a difficult matter to awaken an interest in religious things in these large cities. And yet there are many honest souls in them who will yet accept the light and reflect its rays to others. Copenhagen is sending missionaries to convert the heathen in far-off lands, when there are multitudes of her people who are as truly ignorant of God and His Word. Men with the spirit of Paul are needed to preach Christ and Him crucified. A beautiful city. Copenhagen is a large city for the little kingdom of Denmark. It possesses an excellent harbor, and being situated on the narrow straits connecting the Baltic with an arm of the North Sea, it is on the highway through which passes much of the commerce of Sweden, Germany, and Russia. It is the residence of the king and the headquarters of the Danish army. In the midst of the city, and surrounded on all sides by massive stone blocks, are wide open spaces containing many acres, which are reserved as training grounds for soldiers. In the early morning we hear the measured tread of large companies of soldiers marching along the streets, and wherever we go on the streets, we see companies of tall, athletic young men dressed in the light, jaunty uniform of the King's Guards. The King of Denmark is allied with some of the most powerful nations of Europe. While we were in Copenhagen, he was receiving a visit from his son-in-law, the Tsar of Russia. One of his daughters is wife of the Prince of Wales. Another is married to the Duke of Cumberland. The crown prince is married to a Swedish princess. Another son has married a French princess, while one of his sons is the king of Greece. There is probably no city of its size which has so many beautiful parks, artificial lakes, and pleasant avenues. At a little distance from our stopping place is an artificial lake, which is 2 miles in length. The water is clear as crystal, and upon its glassy surface many beautiful white swans were floating gracefully. It is crossed by pretty footbridges, while a broad street runs all around it, and rows of chestnut trees beautify its borders. In Copenhagen, the children have not been forgotten. In different parts of the city, there are small enclosures of 3 or 4 acres with groves of shade trees, which are kept solely for playgrounds. No vehicles are allowed to pass through them, and the children can here enjoy their sports in safety. One day we rode out to a place of resort at the seashore, about 10 miles from the city. As we look across the strait, here about 16 miles wide, the hills of Sweden are visible in the distance. The water is very clear, so that the white sandy bottom can be distinctly seen for considerable distance. It is strewn with rocks and with mounds of sea moss of lighter and darker shades of green, forming a lovely picture. At a little distance from the beach is an extensive park 4 miles in length, a dense forest of beech trees interspersed with evergreens. This forest is kept like a garden, and there are walks and drives extending through it in all directions. The dark blot on this beautiful scenery is the beer gardens. At the entrance to the grounds are buildings fitted up in the most attractive manner for the sale of wine and beer, and these places are liberally patronized. It is not enough that temptation lurks at every street corner in the great city, but it lies in wait for all who go out for recreation amid the scenes of nature. God designed that we should be refreshed and invigorated by the blessings He has bestowed upon us in His created works. It is His purpose that the beauties of nature should have a refining, elevating influence upon us. He has endowed men with mental powers capable of reasoning from cause to effect. By studying the great book of nature, they may comprehend the majesty, the goodness, and the power of the Creator. Were the senses kept clear and the intellect unclouded, they would thus find manifold sources of elevated, satisfying enjoyment, and their hearts would go out in praise and gratitude to God. But this Satan is determined to prevent. Therefore he tempts men to the use of wine and strong drink, by which the understanding is darkened, the senses confused, and the image of God defaced. By the indulgence of appetite, the perceptions become so blunted that men cannot discern God in His works. They may range through the most beautiful scenes in nature, but they have not a thought of the Creator. How many endowed with good natural abilities thus degrade the intellect and dishonor God? Their nature becomes brutish. It is impossible for them to be heavenly minded. They have rendered themselves incapable of governing or guiding the springs of mental or moral activity. Thus Satan prevents man from fulfilling the destiny which heaven has marked out for him, to reach the highest attainments, physical, mental, and moral, that he himself may be happy, that his fellow men may be blessed by his example, and that God may be glorified. The things of this world would be enjoyable were it not for the curse of sin, but crime, sorrow, suffering, and death meet us everywhere. Poverty and even life itself is not safe. Upon the most beautiful portions of the earth, in the valleys, on the mountains, in the crowded cities, in the wilderness, or upon the waters of the great deep, there is danger and death. The restless, surging masses of humanity have forgotten their Creator. Transgression of God's law has brought discord, misery, and desolation upon our world. And yet, in their blindness and madness, men continue to transgress. They refuse to listen to the voice of God, inviting them to find peace in Him. Kings, statesmen, the mighty ones of the earth, are powerless to give peace and rest to the soul. It is only in obedience to God's law that true happiness can be found. We must submit our will to God if we would have His divine and eternal harmony in our souls. The richest treasures, the highest blessings of this life, are meager and unsatisfying when compared with those of the future immortal life. There will open to the senses scenes of beauty that no language can portray. Eye hath not seen nor ear heard, neither have entered into the heart of man the things which God hath prepared for them that love Him. And these precious treasures are freely offered to all who will accept them. Blessed are they that do His commandments, that they may have right to the tree of life, and may enter in through the gates into the city